Broadcasting from Nashville, Tennessee, this is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. Welcome back to those of you in our vast listening audience. I'm Lizette Beard, and I'm here with my co-hosts Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver. In today's research expose, we are talking about the explosive data behind Americans and their Bible reading habits. So guys, gut reaction, how do you feel about my new approach to our openings? I'm trying to give them a little razzmatazz. You know, because people have that mistaken idea that research isn't fascinating. So how do you feel? Are you feeling
a little clickbaity to me?
you can keep pumping it up. Lots of adjectives. That's good.
So, you know, anything else you guys have ideas on, like to really get people thinking about research in an exotic, exciting, dangerous sort of way?
Who said it's not already exciting?
Here's the thing. Rumor is out there. There are some people who may or may not think. Now, I believe it is. I believe it is. But sometimes I think maybe just if we could change how we approach it. For example, I know we're going to get into some others, but probably the most important stat I saw when I was looking at the research was about how people treat quotes from the Bible when they see them on social media. Just right off the bat, 25% of respondents said they don't use social media, so I'm just kind of scooting those to the side. I don't remember being consulted on this question because the options were they pay closer attention to it. That was 18%. 35% don't treat it any differently. So when they see a Bible quote in Scripture, they don't treat it any differently. 14% pay less attention to it when they see it in social media. 9% have never seen or noticed quotes from the Bible on social media. Now, if I had been consulted, we would have had another option on there, which would have been, it completely depends on how crazy the person is who is posting the Bible quote. Because that has everything to do with how I look at it.
There definitely is completely different tones when people use Scripture on social media. You know, sometimes it's accompanied by a nice picture, and it's just, here it is. Here's a little encouragement, a little word for the day. But other times, yeah, it's like a whole sermon, or it's coming at you from a weird angle.
Oh, weird angle, yeah. Like strung in with a bunch of angel pictures and then some potty mouth memes that go along with it. And I'm like, what are you doing? And then, yeah. So sometimes I'm like, or it's a holiday, and that's where everybody's got to have. Like on holidays, especially those tied with the Christian faith, people who never post a scripture verse, they're all over it. It's Bible, Bible, Bible.
Or they post a quote that they think is scripture.
Yes, that's true. That's all right. So that was my thing. Maybe it was even a voice of protest that I know we don't always enjoy it when people don't want to fit into a category, but that was kind of one of my things. I was like, I don't fit in those because the craziness of who is posting it is a big factor. Talking about people, how they enjoy the Bible or desire to read the Bible, yet their practices seem not necessarily to match up with that. Casey, break that down a little bit for us.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, yeah, we saw kind of in our research, one of the big takeaways, at least for me, and I think for us, all of us, was that people who really like the Bible don't necessarily really read the Bible. So when we ask about several words or phrases and which of them describe the Bible, a lot more people use the positive descriptors like a good source of morals, a historical account, true or life-changing, than used any negative ones like harmful or bigoted or outdated. So you're sort of seeing, you know, a pretty broad among Americans, positive feeling towards the Bible. 40% of Americans say the Bible is a book to read over and over again. And that's 53% of Christians, 65% of Protestants, and 85% of those with evangelical beliefs. They're saying it's worth reading over and over again. So you definitely see those stats on people really liking the Bible, at least.
You know what bothered me about this one? And then I think it's accurate, but I did not like when I looked at the breakdown of how many people said they would describe the Bible as a story. Now they could pick any of these. So if you said it's an historical account, you weren't limited to not say it was a story. Mm-hmm. But when I peeked over at the statistical, what was significant, I noticed non-religious are more likely to select a story than those who identify as Christians. Those without evangelical beliefs are more likely to describe it as a story than those with evangelical beliefs. And those who attend religious service less than once a month, more likely than regular attendees. And I think that this was a little bit of what we were fishing for when we were talking about the questions. But, and I understand that for many, story has the connotation of fiction. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it in the dictionary, it's an account.
Mm-hmm.
It's a retelling, a narrative, going back to my source, dictionary.com. Don't tell Carol Pipe. She doesn't always approve. A narration of a series of events. And I think that makes me sad because the more I've learned to look at the Bible as an overarching story and tying pieces together, the more it has helped me enjoy it, come back to it. So that one, that made me sad that there is a resistance, it appears, among evangelicals, among believers, to looking at it as a story, where I think that's a big key to increasing the engagement.
Well, and I mean, not to just be hyping Lifeway curriculum, but, you know, currently my Sunday school class is going through Gospel Project, and I think it's been really meaningful for me to just sort of walk through it in that kind of narrative arc of saying, like, how is all of Scripture, you know, leading and pointing to Jesus? And so, yeah, just that, like you said, I think that sometimes we get really caught up in sort of saying, well, this is definitely, you know, historical, and this is historical, and I think that's true, but also that still, you know, we can sometimes miss on sort of the broad narrative arc of Scripture and how that's, you know, beautiful as well as true.
To balance out your blatant advertising for Lifeway curriculum, I want to recommend the Jesus Storybook Bible by Sally Lloyd-Jones, who she does a fantastic job in a children's Bible tying the whole story together. She picks about, you know, 60 or so key stories in Scripture, but then makes a point to tie each one to the cross, to Jesus. And it's, I think if someone is an adult who's not been exposed to that, and I mean, I took a lot of Bible classes before I really kind of saw the pieces together, so I wish I'd read that before I got that. Anyway, I highly recommend that in my advocating for let's also embrace this as a story. So that was, I think that was a piece that really stood out to me. All right, Casey, I kind of jumped in on you there, but...
Oh, you're fine. Yeah, so I mean, I guess kind of getting back to that idea that we like the Bible, but we don't always read the Bible. So we had 40% of Americans saying the Bible is a book to read over and over again, and yet only 20% of Americans say they actually have read all the Bible at least once. Only 22% of Americans are systematically, day by day, reading through sections of the Bible. So, you know, on that one, people are more likely to say that they look things up when they have a need or look up verses suggested by others than to systematically read through the book they say is worth reading over and over again.
So, Lizette, how do we get people to do something that they need to do? I think you normally refer to getting somebody to do something they don't want to do as working your magic.
Hey, whoa.
So how does that work? How do you get somebody who's not in the Word to, and yet they think it's a positive thing, to actually engage?
I think in a lot of situations, we may look at something and think, oh, this is good, people should do this. But just because someone thinks I should do something, I'm not always just real on board with that. Because, and I don't think everyone should do what others think they should do. So a book that I think has been very helpful by Chip and Dan Heath, and it's called Switch, and it's on how people make a change, what's required when people make a change, built on some research done in the field of what's called behavioral economics. And one of the things they say, for something to change, someone has to start doing something differently. So if you want to convince people to change or to give them an opportunity to change, you need to connect with them logically or in their head, emotionally in their heart, and then help them see the path to change. And their illustration is a rider on an elephant, that you can convince the rider on an elephant of something. That's the logical, rational side. But if the elephant is not convinced, which is the emotional part, the elephant's going to go where the elephant wants to go. Mm. And so, and I think I really landed on that because a lot of what we do in research can have a tendency towards the logical. We look at this number, then, you know, if you know this, why not? You know, if you know that. But then we see in reality, if people haven't bought in. So I won't go into a whole bunch, but you direct the rider, you motivate the elephant, and then you shape the path. And it's all about breaking things down and keeping them simplified and connecting, being intentional. And the book, I do recommend it because there are examples of what they did in simple ways, whether it's getting college students to donate to a can drive or a community making a change and emphasizing or companies making changes. I think there's some really helpful ideas in here. So I'm going to throw a couple of these out. And then just based on what we saw in the research, maybe you guys will give them some examples, maybe get people real excited about buying some Lifeway curriculum and the Heath Brothers book. So direct the rider, connecting with thinking and the rational part. So one of the examples, and we'll just think in terms of a leader in a ministry or a pastor or someone who, even a Bible study leader, follow the bright spots. Find out what's working and, you know, who's doing the Bible reading and tell that story. So highlight the bright spots.
Yeah, that's definitely an area that we've seen very effective in churches that are moving, is that their leaders are celebrating important things, celebrating things that they want to be taking place. And we know that Bible reading is one of those. And so so celebrating that, giving examples of how that's affected people's lives for the better is definitely something leaders can be doing.
I really like this because this resonates with maybe how I often make progress, but script the critical moves. Don't think in big picture. Think in terms of specific behaviors.
One of the action steps we saw when we were asking pastors what ways, and any, if any, do you encourage your congregation to read the Bible on their own, a few of the action steps we saw them talk about was providing a printed Bible reading plan. 64% of pastors say they're doing that. Or providing a digital or online Bible reading plan. 40% so that they were doing that. So that, I think that ties in as one of those ways that kind of giving the actual step-by-step, hey, here's a means by which you can go about accomplishing this task, and not just saying you should be reading the Bible a lot.
I would even say there's some benefit if you've got a lot of folks who have not done very much, and it's not just that they're out of the habit, but don't necessarily toss out, hey, we're going to read the whole thing. You know, I mean, that's a great option. I highly recommend it. But for some folks, to make it through four chapters and to have that sense of success of, oh, you know, that was meaningful. You know, they hadn't done it before. But then there's also, this sounds kind of, I don't want to sound negative, but there's an end in sight. You're not committing to 365 days of this whole new habit. Hopefully they'll catch on to it. Skipping over to the emotional, motivating the elephant. Find the feeling. What they say is knowing something isn't enough to cause change. So make people feel something. There's a lot that we get in the data to know, but what's out there? What's the potential for knowing or helping people understand the feeling or connect with the feeling for reading the Bible?
I think there's huge potential in that. We see it in advertising where, you know, some what you'd think would be a very rational decision, like buying a car. The advertisers spend all of their time and energy trying to make it not a rational decision, to make it more of an emotional decision, because that's going to get you to move. And you see that in an advertisement where you're, the feeling is what is being conveyed more so than the statistics on the car. And I don't think we think about that enough in church life. We're in the do this, don't do that kind of mode. And Scripture definitely includes that. But as we read Paul's letters, we see him inserting the emotional as well, and putting those appeals in there to you know, that are related to stamina, that are related to his own journey of just being completely dependent on God, completely invested in the journey with God, that very much is emotional.
I think one thing to kind of piggyback on Scott there is, you know, for advertising, there's a comparison we can make there, but also a contrast to be made in that, you know, a lot of times when people are buying something that's been advertised to them, they're buying something that they know they don't need because they feel an emotional connection to it. So we have something that we see a lot of people saying, like, they know they do need it, you know, in Scripture. And, you know, we've seen a lot variety of ways that that's true, that they do need that. And so then helping, you know, hopefully create that emotional connection so they also want what they do need in addition to the things that they don't really need that we just buy on impulse.
In Shape the Path, I'll just pull out one of the examples. They have tweaked the environment. When the situation changes, the behavior changes, so change the situation. And it's been a few years since I've read the whole book, but one of the examples was a business that I think one of their customer criticisms was that people spent too much time on hold or waiting for customer service on the phone. So the new head cheese threw out the phone system. There was now no longer any way to take messages. A live person had to answer the phone, and it always had to be handled. So by changing that one thing, created an environment where it wasn't dependent on everybody getting up to speed or even feeling like they were going to make the change. So what are some things in whether it's a ministry, an organization, or even a family, how could you tweak the environment?
Well, I think removing some of the dependency on the pastor to be delivering that Bible reading, you know, it is encouraging to see 3 out of 4 churches have an additional Bible reading in addition to whatever's in the sermon. So, you know, that's kind of illustrating that this is not that hard. And so there's a positive element to that. But, you know, can we walk into a Bible study and actually expect people to have read that passage ahead of time? That sounds like an old ideal, but it's flipping the classroom a little bit, kind of saying you're going to do some preparation, you're going to do some reading ahead of time, and then let's come together and just talk about it rather than just the leader having read it ahead of time.
Or, and now I'm just brainstorming, so this may be a terrible idea, what if you read the material together? Like, that's what your together time was, and then, you know, there was some interaction during the week, you know, where you were engaging. I don't know. There's some things. Well, I think that may be all we have time for today. But as a special teaser, we have another fun segment coming up on Bible engagement in an upcoming podcast. So stay tuned for that. We would love your feedback. We would really love your positive feedback, but we'll take any kind of feedback that you have. If you could go in and rate the podcast positively and give us a review on iTunes, that always helps. You can also send us your questions about this topic or any others that we're covering to our Twitter handles, SMCon, at SMCon, at StatsGuyCasey, and at Lizette Beard. Or you can also go check out some of our other research projects at LifewayResearch.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.